The Spokane Symphony happens this weekend on, as always, Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. And it has a romantic theme, a love theme, which has so many levels that one can deal with in the combination of music by Schumann and Brahms, including and especially the Brahms, is represented by the Brahms Violin Concerto, played by himself, Mateusz Wolski. Good morning, Mateusz.
Good morning, Vern.
Before we get into the violin and the violin concerto, let's kind of recount that interesting, strange, and they never know really what was going on triangle of Mr. and Mrs. Schumann and Johannes Brahms. What do you know about that relationship?
Well, you know, actually, this is a very fascinating story. You know, in our musical world, you know, outside of Mozart in the Jungle, you know, there are some actual real stories that are absolutely fascinating in terms of kind of the love triangles and affairs and how things therefore come about, meaning the wonderful works of art. And so I started actually digging a little bit into this, and what I was able to come up with was that Brahms, who was essentially a protege of Schumann, kind of discovered him, so to speak, and allowed Brahms to really flourish and start to be published and became famous, you know, had this wonderful wife, Clara. And then Brahms essentially was living either next door in their house, and Schumann has a bunch of mental health issues, and Brahms was there to essentially take care of the household, and he fell in love with Clara.
And how could you not, from everything we hear about her?
I mean, she was a very, very special lady. Yet, he had a tremendous amount of respect towards his mentor. So it sounds like the feeling was mutual. But according to all the accounts, I mean, they never actually consumed the affair, so to speak. They really could only express themselves via proxy, being amazing compositions in which they declare their love for each other. They talk about it. It never happens. So it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's almost unimaginable for a modern person. It's like, come on, you know. I mean, but I don't know. There's this absolutely amazing sense of honor of getting in touch with your inner self, exploring what is in your heart and in your mind, and you know, and being constricted by certain rules and boundaries, and you know, and that I don't know, that conflict really, I think, is what breathes this absolute fantastic music.
Yeah, and of Brahms and Schumann
and both Clara.
And both Schumann, and certainly she's been more recently given her due with good recordings and performances of the terrific music that she wrote. And Mateusz Wolski, who's playing the Brahms Concerto with a big capital T-H-E, it's the big one, which was alluded to well in the Spokesman Review this morning, and we're not going to repeat that, so I really recommend going to that, Google it or find it online or whatever, or go out and grab a paper this morning and read the really wonderful thing that Mateusz said about his problems or his issues of playing it, because it is a mountain to climb, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's as I keep telling people, you know, this is one of those pieces that is on your bucket list. Mm-hmm. If you're a professional violinist, number one, you have to learn how to play instrument well enough to tackle it. Then having an opportunity to find an orchestra that will feature you to play it. You know, it's pretty tough unless you started as a prodigy at age 10 and you're concertizing the world. So I feel particularly, blessed in this particular occasion, because I feel like, you know, I learned how to play the fiddle, and now I have the opportunity to actually play one of those absolutely wonderful pieces that I always wanted to play. So you know, it's kind of,
And that's what Brahms is, because certainly for us horn players, that is the top of the mountain for us. The trio for horn, violin, and piano is, we can say without much qualification, our very best, greatest piece, work of art that we get to do.
Yeah, and I would say, Yeah, it's very hard to pick, and if you know, people quite often ask you, who's your favorite composer? Yeah, or you know, what is your favorite piece? And there's so much absolutely amazing music written through the centuries that it's really hard to say. But I would say that Brahms is definitely, I think in the top three pieces of all time for the violinist. There's many reasons for it.
Yeah. Well, and so we've already told one relational story of Brahms and the two Schumanns. Go ahead and tell the Brahms Joachim story.
Oh, the Brahms Joachim. Well, you know, from what I know, they were friends. They admired each other greatly. And actually, Brahms admired Joachim as a composer, not only as a violinist. So when it came to writing the concerto, he did consult Joachim quite a bit, because I think his original draft was completely unplayable. I mean, Brahms was thinking about the music. Mm-hmm. He was not kind of thinking, is it possible to be played on the violin or not? And he did, I think, as a composer, he thinks like a pianist. So certain things that are, kind of quite easy on the piano or on the violin just become very, 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 very challenging. So Joachim did consult on that piece, thank goodness. Some of the violinists think that, you know, it would be nice if he consulted even more because there's still quite a bit of awkward writing. But, I think it's all for a very good cause.
Sure. And Joachim was fairly adamant about what he needed to change, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. You know, I mean, I could, you know, I've lived through that experience as a student where you have obviously not Brahms, but a friend composer coming to you and says like, hey, what do you think about that piece? And you start playing. It's like, oh, man, I mean, there's ways to write it that I think are going to be equally effective with what you're trying to achieve, but can be much, much easier to play. You know, that one note here, you put it in a different place and all of a sudden I can play it twice as fast. So those are kind of the considerations, and I think understanding of the nature of the instrument, especially if you are trying to push the boundaries, which I think Brahms was doing with his piece in terms of, how to express this tremendous emotions, and the harmonies and the orchestrations that he was using, to make it all work and make it this grandiose and have the little lonely violin to kind of compete against the orchestra. It's a tough challenge.
Sure. And I want to now to get into it, and I will invite you to challenge and debunk things I'm about to say about this, but about the first movement of it. Well, first, quickly the story, because it was such a memorable story. I was driving to Seattle one winter, and I stopped at the Vantage, at the top of the Vantage Hill, and there was a hitchhiker who had been, his ride had taken off with his stuff and left him stranded there, and he was cold and hungry.
Oops.
And I took him in, and we got in the car, and I had food, and the car was warm, and I had a cassette recording of Perlman playing the Brahms concerto. And this young man who was just at the perfect open spot. I mean, he was so open at that moment. And we listened to that as we drove. And it is the my strongest memory of that piece, because he was so open and it was such a thrilling discovery. And what I remember about the first movement was really, really how intense the violin versus the orchestra factor of the first movement is, the conflict I felt and all of the drama there, and then the way I felt that it got answered by the Joachim cadenza.
Oh, yeah.
So that's my personal story. What's yours, or should we not even lay this much on it?
I know. I mean, first of all, this is a fantastic story. Of yours, we rarely get to hear those. You are here to interview people, not tell your own stories. But no, I mean, what should I say? To me, you mentioned Perlman. I mean, he's kind of, for me, musically speaking, he is, I feel, almost like my godfather in terms of what I cherish about playing the violin. And one of the things is that whenever he picks up his violin, whether you can see his recordings on the YouTube or you listen to them on the CDs or through the radio, is that the joy of life that he's able to communicate, and some people who know and some people who don't. I mean, he's wheelchair bound because he had polio as a child, and still you have essentially a cripple that has this absolutely enormous joy of life and big heart and finds a way how to translate it through the violin. This is something that always captivated me, his sound. So I would say some of my favorite recordings of that piece, it is Isaac Perlman, so we're on the same page. And yet, I grew up behind the Iron Curtain, and the recording to listen to when I was growing up was David Oistrakh.
Sure.
Which is very, very different because it's just very stately, very royally played with this grand, in the grand manner. It's, you know, the piece becomes very, very different. You know, it's more dramatic and dark and stormy, I think, than what, for example, what Perlman would do. So it's fascinating to see how people in the different worlds take the music and you know, kind of filter them through their own personal experiences and the time they live in, and then try to bring it to the audience. So, you know, this piece that has this kind of flexibility that it allows you many different takes, even though you're playing exactly what's written on the page. So it's fascinating. But I think in general, the romantic music, and this I would think be a pinnacle of romantic music, allows you to kind of really go, you know, go overboard sometimes with the expression. That's why we love it, because I mean, we essentially, there are places where you would love to rip your bow tie off and, you know, and the buttons of your shirt and just pound your chest, and then there are moments where you just, I mean, you feel so incredibly lonely and you're just hanging by a thread, and yeah, so you have those amazing extremes in that piece, and I think that your hitchhiker friend, I think he got it, even if he was not maybe exposed to classical music.
That's what I certainly sense. Yeah,
you know, it's because it is. I mean, it really works through the whole gamut of life.
Mm-hmm. And so, and are you doing the Joachim cadenza?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, you know, in some ways I'm a traditionalist. There's mm-hmm. there's few other cadenzas. There are some people that did write their own stuff for it, but. Well, I mean, if you want to write your own stuff and put it in the Brahms concerto, you have to be pretty, pretty self-confident about your writing skills. But I think, to me, given the history of the piece and the relationship between Joachim and Brahms, you know, this is just like peanut butter and jelly sandwich. They have to go together. You cannot separate those two.
And do you feel that the cadenza answers some questions that have been asked in that first movement?
You know, it's very interesting because I think, I don't know. The way I look at the cadenza in this particular piece, to me, it's a bridge, more so.
Okay.
Because I think that, you know, the Brahms, the way he writes and how he kind of closes the piece, he poses the question and then kind of answers it. Right after the cadenza, he goes into this absolutely gorgeous moment where you feel like you're in heaven. And then, of course, he finishes it with a big bang, which is always fun. But the cadenza kind of takes the material of the first movement, kind of plays with it. Of course, you have a bunch of showing off, typically what you would do in the cadenza. But then it sets it up really, really well. So when that Brahms writing comes back in, I mean, it's just heaven.
Yeah, and then that's only the first movement.
Yeah. I mean, by the time you finish with the first movement, it's like, oh no, there's still so much more to come. And actually, I think the hardest part of the piece is what happens right after the first movement, because you just played and hopefully delivered, and you had a great time doing so, and then all of a sudden you have a 2 minutes of some amazing writing for the orchestra, and particularly for the principal oboe, where he gets to play, well, the most beautiful tune in the piece, and you're just standing there, getting colder and colder by a second. And, you know, and 30 seconds break is great. It allows you to kind of calm down with your adrenaline. Minute, I mean, yeah, it's still all right. But 2 minutes, it's like, oh boy, it feels like you have to start from scratch in terms mm-hmm. of your comfort, in terms of what you're trying to say. And you start, and the way he writes the opening line for the violin at the beginning of the second movement after this wonderful oboe solo, it's very vulnerable. It's very vulnerable. So it's actually, that is true challenge right there. Mm-hmm. You would never think about it mm-hmm. if you have not have to play the piece. Mm-hmm. But once you're playing it, it's like, okay, this is different. So you have to put your head in a very musical place. Yeah, I keep finding with the whole piece, because it is, it's still not very violent friendly on occasion. You really have to think about music at all times. As soon as you start to think about, okay, so what is the fingering, or how am I going to play this with the bow? I mean, you're dead. Mm-hmm. You just have to really transcendent and forget about the instrument or and the instrumental challenges. You just have to be the music.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the second movement. And then there's the third movement.
Ah, well, the third movement, you know, and this is what I love about Brahms. It's like a great moral to a story or a great punchline in a joke. Brahms tends to have this gift of always delivering those amazing closing movements where you just cannot help. But when you leave the concert hall, you just keep, it just keeps playing in your head. The third movement is essentially the dance, very virtuosic. It's, you know, the Hungarian influences, so to speak. It's, you know, it's fun to play. I think it's fun to listen. But yet, you know, there's this one moment which I think is also amazing writing. Is that he gets us on the roll, and it all gets very virtuosic and fast paced and kind of happy and boisterous. And there is this one moment where he all of a sudden slows everything down, and there is this almost like a 6-measure cadenza. Right before the sort of coda of the movement, actually a little bit before the coda, and where there's just solo violin playing a bunch of most beautiful harmonies that you could maybe find in the Bach sometimes. And then the orchestra comes back in. But there's this moment where, the whole orchestra just drops. And I was like, initially when I didn't know the piece very well, I thought that maybe this was from the second movement. Maybe first movement, but you never thought about this, like Big J. Gandhi put on the brakes and then there's this gorgeous heavens open and then we're back in the fray and then there's a gallop towards the end of the piece and it's just, I don't know how to describe it except I'm very, 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 very excited about playing it, you know, and I think we're all going to have a really good time.
Yeah, Mateusz Wolski, who's the featured soloist playing the Brahms Violin Concerto on Saturday night, Sunday afternoon with the Spokane Symphony at the Fox. And anybody who's been listening well for 20 minutes, you've been treated to the drama, to this sense of how much true drama and reality in the moment of music performance is. So I invite you and even challenge you to be there on Saturday or Sunday and see how it fulfills you, because that was a lot of fun. Thanks, Mateusz.
Thank you very much.